Hello and welcome to this week's Family Tree Talk podcast. I'm Helen Tavey, editor of Family Tree, and with me is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hello. So have you been having fun with your family history?
It's been very family history oriented, to be honest. I've not done much tree searching at all. Obviously, last time we spoke, I was looking at Tank Man, and we got quite far with that, finding out about his battalion, etc. So I've gone off and I've just been sat reading his battalion's war diaries and learning bits about that. It's been good. It's been a little bit harrowing. Very interesting though.
I'm impressed. It sounds like you've done some pretty in-depth research then, reading through those war diaries.
I've tried to. It's quite hard work. Some pages are brilliant and you can like just read it all. Other pages, either the handwriting's really hard work or it's written in like blue pencil. And you, or maybe the scans are bad. I don't know. So some pages I can't read a lot. So it's been good, but it's been frustrating as well because I've not quite found exactly what I want, but I found out a lot of information. Yeah, it was very strange sort of process to go through. My heart was racing as I was getting closer towards his death date. So the journals, it's top secret. It tells you about the battle plans, what the regiment's up to, all sorts of things like that. And then it's progressed obviously by date. And I had the date of, I think it was the 8th of August for my guy dying. And as you sort of getting nearer and nearer the battle, my heart was proper pounding. I was like, oh my God, this is really tense. I went through quite a lot of emotional things I wasn't expecting to happen. It was strange. Even prior to that, in this war diary, they've got something where they did their own, not Olympic games, like a sports day. And it was done by a battalion and stuff. And I'm suddenly rooting for this battalion that I didn't even know anything about, apart from the fact that I don't even know what relative he is. What did we decide he was? My great-great cousin or something.
Great-great uncle.
Yeah, something I can't remember. But I was rooting for this team and it was just really cool to see. So they had loads of challenges and like sports day. And like it told you the top three people placing in each different event and stuff. So it's quite cool to think, again, I'm playing on my visions of SAS Rogue Heroes, but like putting them in context of like, oh, they're having this big sports day and they're all against each other. So that was quite cool to read. And then that the 7th Battalion won as well, which is what he was in. So I was like really proud of them, even though it happened, God knows how long ago. Well, 1918 it was. So it was cool. It was real like texturizing, like building his character and building this world. So that bit was fantastic. The actual war stuff was quite harrowing. It's like two days prior to the day he died, they're on about starting an offensive. And this send it, again, it's very hard to read all of it because some of it is in this blue pencil and I just can't make head or tail of it. But they're starting to send a few battalions in to either weaken the front that they're attacking or take out key installations. So on the 6th and 7th, they're doing that. And you get a report saying, oh, the mission was successful, but they lost a lot of units doing whatever they were doing to get ready. So they were under strength going into the day that my great-great-uncle died. They were under strength going into this battle. So that there's all that sort of stuff going on. And then the actual day he died, it's the one of the few days where I can't read properly what's going on, but there's a lot of talk afterwards. There's like an appendix and it mentions like the use of within the divisions and stuff. And there is a tank section and it's all to do with the 7th. So Tank Man quite probably was in a tank, which is quite cool. And what else is there in there? There's a list of fatalities. I think this is the one that hit me the most, that there's like a fatalities list, but it only lists the officers. So like the four or five, like quite high ranking officers, I think like I'm going all over the place. There's a letter afterwards from some super duper colonel saying, oh, we're really proud of what you've done on this offensive. It's been amazing. We've done well. We've actually done what we should have done with an understrength squad. We've got through, but we've made X, Y, and Z losses. One of them being the colonel or whatever of my great great uncle's regiment. So he gets a big mention. And then there's this fatalities list. And there's three or four like lieutenants and things like that. And then there's another section that says other 49 people died. 13 people are gassed. It's really just broad and sweeping. They don't actually get named. So that was quite sad about that. It made me a little bit angry. So I haven't found any reference to his name in these journals at all, but there's so much texture there. Like, I was literally, again, been influenced by what I've seen on SAS Rogue Heroes, seeing these battles playing out. And then there's even maps as well in there in this journal. So they're really cool to look at. It shows you where the units are and where they're supposed to be attacking. And then afterwards, it tells you each individual role of the tank division or whatever. It was good. So I've learned a lot. I don't know if I feel like I can fully put it to bed and say, yes, I finished with that story. I feel there's probably more digging to do, but it's satisfying my curiosity that, yes, there is that story there.
I think it's amazing. So you've had this childhood memory almost of Tank Man, as you've called him, you know, just all those years. And he sat there as a kind of a little side memory, which has been remembered just like a little tiny flickering light in your family, that there was this Tank Man and he didn't have any descendants to carry on the story and tell his story for the last 107 years. And then now, with your curiosity, you have brought his story back into your family. And like all the things you've told me, it gave me the shivers. I'm not even related to you. And so now that he can properly become part of your story, and he'll probably be known as Tank Man forever, but he'll know who he is and you'll be able to say what he did. So it's really moving, and it's always amazing. We always wonder when we have these family anecdotes how much we should rely on them, whether we should dismiss them out of hand. And I'm a big fan of family anecdotes, and I think you should never dismiss them out of hand, because that was the grain of a little tiny fact from you to start building out, you know, something which should spark your curiosity and something you could build out from. And even if the facts are wrong, it never matters, because you're learning about, there's always a reason why the facts get wrong. Like, a typical one would be people want to kind of poshify their ancestors, so they, you know, push them up the scale or whatever. Yeah. But it doesn't matter, that you're just learning about previous generations, that they really wanted to be better than they were. And that's interesting to know about, that they felt the society pressure to be posher. So it's always interesting, even if the facts aren't straight, it's always fascinating to have those anecdotes. So you're doing him really proud by remembering him and doing a story. And you said you're not quite sure if you're ready to put him to bed. And I think there's probably, you're right, I think you probably do need to do a bit more digging. It's really brutal and frustrating that you're unlikely to find him personally mentioned in the records, because he was a soldier rather than an officer. The only reason how you might find a soldier mentioned is that they did a particular act of gallantry, but that's a very small number of people out of the millions of people who served. It's just a small number of thousands of people who would get these things like a military medal. A soldier would get maybe a military medal for gallantry. We might get mentioned in dispatches, and then you could go and look him up in the Gazette. So if he didn't, it's just the bald, brutal truth that most of the soldiers will just be listed once he died as, like, 49 men died.
Yeah, that was quite shocking. That I was like, my heart was racing already and reading about this, and I was just even though I knew who died, I was terrified to actually see it as a fact, which is stupid because he's long gone and it's not going to change anything, and I don't even know the guy. But it was quite emotional. But that one page with the fatalities list, I thought, oh, I'm going to see his name now. And then after you get past the like I said, the named guys, it's just this brutal list of, like, dead, missing in action, gassed, and maybe mortally injured or something like that. I can't remember. But it was just so blunt. It's just a number.
I'd say, apart, as well as, like, you know, rootling around, finding more micro details for that period and reading, you know, the unit war diaries like you are, then it could also be really interesting to read more broadly. So to maybe read a regimental history covering that period of the war, and also to cover just the First World War history covering, you know, that last summer of the war, and find out what were the main offensives, find out where your ancestors' regiment was serving, because then, you know, we have these headline acts like the Somme and Passchendaele and Ypres and all those main campaigns and battles which go through the war, and the ebb and flow of where the kind of heat of the action is and what's important, and then you will just be able to piece your ancestors' chapter within this wider history of the war, and it'll just help to give you more of that orientation context stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I felt like when I was reading the journal, I can't remember it off the top of my head now, but the operation had a name. So it's like, oh, that'd be interesting to actually find out what the point of that operation was and what happened in it. So I can, like you say, get this broader context and a feel for it all. And then I guess it's then my job to record it somewhere. Just to make sure these facts stay with him.
So what you could do is, there's lots of different things you could do. On his profile, on your ancestry tree, you can add all this information. You can write a life story. So when you go to somebody's profile, then one of the tabs below them is you can write a life story. So you can literally write narrative text, write it in a Word document, paste it in, or just write it in there and then. And you can add just details, you know, with references to the records that you found. So the unit war diary, you can source that information and say you found the unit war diary for that regiment. This date, he was just recorded and put it in quote marks or whatever, so it's clearly a transcript, or you can transcribe as many of the details as you can do, like copy them out, type them up, and that, add them to your ancestry tree. And what you will probably find is, if you have a photo of him, add that too, it doesn't matter if it's he's in uniform or not, you will find that other people will copy your information probably. So don't be stressed about that, I would say. Just maybe you might find a collaborator, a fellow family member who might even know some more. Different parts of the family might have been handed down actual war stories, contextual, anecdotal information. So maybe think of it as an opportunity to pique the curiosity of a distant kin member, and you might get more. Yeah?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'd really like a picture, actually. That'd be cool.
So you could, again, with soldiers rather than officers, it's harder, but you could look in local newspapers. You could, I don't think this would be relevant, but you could try really local publications, like if there's any parish publications.
So would you be looking for that in the area he lived or the area his regiment was situated?
The area he lived, because they're the people who are going to be cherishing and remembering him, and he's in his local village. It's a big deal that he's been killed in the war, but it's not a big deal anywhere else. Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool.
They will be looking locally. Never know. It's worth a try.
Yeah, definitely. It's cool. Like I keep saying it, but I wasn't really interested in the history side at all. But it has been really enjoyable to find these things out. It's I guess I'm learning things as well, not just about him, but I don't know much about the First World War. Just the bits that you see on in films. So it's been really enjoyable to do that. And I do kind of want to keep digging. But then there's another part of me that's very aware that I've not, well, this is the financial aspect of life, I guess. I've not progressed my tree back any further on any other line or done anything other than history research. But I've got this ancestry subscription. So I should be digging for people and other documents in that.
It's hard, isn't it? But I find myself going off on these rabbit holes. And so the rabbit holes genuinely involve me Googling just till I'm blue in the face. And it's mainly online research, but it's accessing, on the whole, free material, which you can find online in all sorts of unlikely specialist places, because there'll be someone who's passionate about or many people who are passionate about your ancestors' regiment who will have blogged about it. You may find transcriptions of regimental histories, or, you know, you could just Google and Google and Google, do lots of long tail searches, really precise searches to home in on the precise information you need. Meanwhile, you are ticking away, paying for your ancestry subscription, but as you say, not particularly using it. It's a really hard balance when you've got limited time. And I don't know what the answer is, sorry. You know, you can pause your ancestry membership. So that's if you think you really are going off on a sidetrack and you really want to just get your head around all of this First World War research, then you could look to pause it and then reactivate it again.
Yeah, I mean, I am paying monthly, so I can, I think, just dip in and dip out. I guess it's that fear. I know it's probably not true, but my fear is I'll stop my subscription and everything that I've put together disappears, all my documents are no longer associated with that person. And I know it's not true, but I've still got that little bit of fear. So I'm like, oh, let's let it tick over. But obviously, the longer you let it tick over, the more money you spend. And if you're not using it, but...
So firstly, if you stop your subscription, your ancestry tree will not disappear. And we talked about this before, but just there's a few useful things to know to help you keep calm. Stop your subscription, your tree will not disappear. It'll remain there exactly as you left it. The only thing you won't be able to do is if you've saved records from your ancestry searches onto your tree, when you try and view them and your subscription isn't live, they'll be all blurred out, okay? But because you would have been following my good advice. As well as saving them to your tree, you'd have been saving them to your computer or cloud somewhere else. So you'll still be able to have your own personal access to those documents forever and ever, wherever else you save them. So you have done that, haven't you, Nathan?
I think I've got some homework for the week.
You've got some homework. If you save them down, then you've got that copy. And then the other thing you can do is you can export a copy, a GEGCOM of your tree, which sounds really complicated, but it's not. You just go to the tree settings and it'll say like export tree or export a GEGCOM or download a tree. I can't remember the exact wording, but that sort of thing. And that downloads just the text of your tree. It doesn't download any images. It's a text-based file, but it means you can go and import that tree into Find My Past or My Heritage somewhere else, another tree building website, and it will all the people and names and dates will pop up.
Right.
So those are your things not to worry about. But I think this is a really good question. Like how to do your family tree on Ancestry is a key question, because we are spending that money. We want to make sure we're building a really good tree. And Ancestry is a fantastic tool and it does keep developing them. So I don't know, are you logged into Ancestry at the minute?
I am indeed, yeah.
Because I've just started a new tree on Ancestry because I'm doing my one name study for the Woolerton area to find out, you know, my Pickerings in that area. Do you remember we were waffling about this, so that I can try and find out, get my correct branch back after I locked off the branch, get the correct people in there, find out who's related to who. And there's a few, as you can imagine, interrelated families in that little village. So I just started a new tree the other day. And then I did spot a few other things which are really helpful on Ancestry. So if we go to tree, and just, have you got one tree on Ancestry, Nathan? Have you got a few?
I've just got one.
One, okay. So yeah, just go to your tree, and then while it's opened up, then the best thing to do, I think, for any of us periodically, is just to have a broader rummage on the tree. Don't, because it's really easy when you use a tool, you use the features of that tool that you use frequently and you just get in the habit of that, and then you might not realize other little cool developments that have been made. So just skipping down the menu on the left hand side, there are so many helpful things in there. And we've talked before about how you can display your tree horizontally, which is like your pedigree with just your direct ancestors.
Yeah.
Right and below vertically, you can see all the siblings and first and second spouses and everything else. Fan allows you to, is an attractive, you don't see that many generations. I think maybe if you pay for Pro Tools, you see more generations. I'm not sure about that.
I think you get to 5 or 6 on that. I really like that one, just
because it's pretty, isn't it?
It's visually pleasing.
Yeah. Then in the list, being your ancestors as the list is really helpful, particularly as you get more people, because you can just scan your eye up and down the list swiftly. So that's fun.
That is really good. That kind of almost emulates what I've done on my Excel document as well. It's that name, birth, death.
Yeah, it's really handy, isn't it? Where else is there? Oh, then obviously gallery. That's nice. That doesn't necessarily just include photos of people. That could include photos of documents. Find in tree is a bit like the list, i.e. if you're looking for somebody, particularly when your tree gets bigger, you can just quickly go and search for them. Hints down this menu, you know, whether you want to turn hints on or off. So what I love about when you look at the hints, if you say you're on the looking at your tree, you're looking at the menu on the left hand side, you press hints, rather than just piecemeal going through your tree looking at the hints person by person, if you look at this list of hints, you've again got more control over what you're looking at. Now, I'm not a big fan of hints, but even I think it's helpful when you go here and you can say, well I am interested in hints that are solely based on records, for instance, because you want to keep your research firsthand. Or it could be you're only interested in the hints that are based on photos, because, for instance, you're really keen to get a photo of your 2x great uncle Tank Man. So you could be really interested in photo hints. And then within that collection of photo hints, you can search by their name or whatever. Yep. It could be that member trees, if you're looking to collaborate with someone, you're really interested to find out what hints you're getting from other member trees. So I just like being able to control my time and my search a bit, and not just the other way of just looking at the hints that are coming up for each person on your family tree can feel like you sat down, you've got a plan that you want to do a family history. Before you know it, you've just spent all the time dabbling around with hints that you weren't particularly wanting to spend time on. So I like this hints list. I think it's really good.
I'm quite a fan of hints, but as you've just been talking, I realise I've become me about it. And when I look at the hints, I only look at records.
Mm.
But I didn't know you could filter it. I just literally just ignore anything that's not a record as I'm scrolling through. That's just, again, my completionist feel of wanting to hit the facts myself and not look at someone else's tree. I do remember I once looked at someone else's tree and saw loads of siblings, and it just freaked me out because it was like, well, I don't know anything about these people. I don't know if they're real. I want to find those documents myself and make those connections.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm a fan of hints.
Yeah, and this one, I think that's okay. Lots of people are. They're obviously really useful. There's one bit I really wanted to flag up to you, because the other week, I think you had an ancestor with two spouses and you wanted to be able to see the spouses, and we fiddled around and we managed to get you to see the spouses. If you go to your tree, go to the left-hand menu, click on the three dots and then click on the words tree viewing options. And then over on the right-hand side, a menu will pop up and it says, there's one option which says always view all spouses.
Yes.
So if you toggle that on, then you're always going to view all spouses. And so you won't be left wondering where the other spouse has gone.
That is great. That,
yeah.
Because that'll stop a lot of confusion. Because like I said, just placing them in time. And as I'm going back with those two in particular, I haven't got the dates yet. And it's like, well, who's which parent? Who's who? Who's married to what? Yeah, that'll be good, actually.
So I think you should toggle your thing that you're always viewing all spouses, and instead of viewing your tree horizontally, view it vertically, because then you'll be seeing all the sideways branches, all the siblings. It looks a bit more messy, but you won't have that nerve-wracking feeling like you've added somebody in and not being able to see them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's perfect for me. That's exactly where I'm at as well, because like once I stop Tankman and try and get back on track, it is my George Horatio Nelson guy, and he's the one who was married twice, having both of his wives died. All right, such a sad story. But it's obviously, I'm going to need both of his wives on there, because there's half-brothers in there as well. That's cool. It's tough, isn't it? I want to do everything all at once.
So what are you going to do then?
Well, I feel like I want to, because I've gone off on a tangent, I feel I want to get a bit more organised again and do my... I'm taking each layer one at a time. Birth, marriage, death. You know, making sure I've got the key details or the core details for everyone who's on my tree. But I love my George Horatio Nelson. I want to know about this guy. It sounds like he's had a right tragic life. Two wives dying, his son dying in the war. I want a young child. Was that his daughter? Yeah, it was his daughter. And potential young child dying. I want to fill out his details, but it is a tangent from where I originally was.
Yeah, I've thought of a plan for you.
Go for it.
So there is a lovely reader of Family Tree called, I won't bring his surname, I don't want to make him blush, but anyway, he's called David, and he has this brilliant plan. And what he does for his family research, he has week one, he does one of his great grandfathers and anything on that branch up and down. Week two is one of his great grandmothers, and he goes on an 8-week plan. So it's his great grandfather, great grandmother, great grandfather, great grandmother. Obviously, you've got 8 great grandparents. So he has his 8-week cycle. If he's on holiday in week three and you can't do that person, too bad. But over the months and years, everybody gets covered, and he just methodically goes branch by branch by branch by branch. So you might like that, but I think you're in a different stage. I think you need to adopt his plan, have a cycle, but your cycle is like week one is tree building. Week two is tangent. Week three is, have I got my records in order? Are my notes written up? Have I downloaded my documents? Will Helen
tell me off?
Tell me off if I haven't done it all correctly. And so you could just literally go tree, tangent, whatever you want to call it, homework, housekeeping. Yeah?
Yeah.
Housekeeping. Tree, tangent, housekeeping. And just keep cycling through over those 3 weeks, because 3 weeks come by really quickly.
If
you're too busy at work and one of those weeks has to be skipped, so be it. I find that really, I can't quite bear saying that about the housekeeping bit, to make sure you haven't got the records on, because I know how hard it is to go backwards and redo things. But
yeah, you feel guilty as well, don't you? Well, I do. I feel like I should, again, because I'm paying for the subscription, I should be doing it every week and making sure I do dedicate some time to it. But as everybody knows, life gets in the way, doesn't it? I'm like running like an idiot at the moment because I'm marathon training. So I'm too spent to do enough.
Mm.
But Yeah, like you say, if I just say, right, I've lost that week and just accept it and know that next week I'm now doing tangential things or housekeeping.
Yeah. Another thing, I was chatting to somebody the other day and they were really feeling the pressure of this. So many things they wanted to do with their family history. And you listen to another webinar and somebody has some good tips in there and you just feel like everything is a blur and you just haven't got enough time to even think what you want to do. So my advice to them was just pick one thing, pick anything, because I do think family history is really good for us. I think it can be very calming and absorbing and escapism if life's hectic. So even if you're busy, it can actually be a really good thing to do. So pick one thing off his things he wanted to do and just do it. Even just do it obsessively in detail. Don't feel like you have to rush it. Just enjoy it. You're doing it. It's supposed to be pleasurable and it definitely doesn't earn you any money in it. But you're doing it because it's a different part of our life, isn't it? It's curiosity, learning about ourselves. And it's just fascinating. I think it can make you a better person. So I think it's really worthwhile doing. So choose one thing off the wish list. And then the other thing I said was like, make a wish list. So everything you want to do, just write it down, literally call it my family history wish list. And then everything you want to do can be on there. And that's a bit, probably you might be doing that a little bit with a research dog because you've got all your to-dos, but you can make a separate wish list. And then even if you are doing the other things, you don't have to worry that you're going to forget the things you want to do. Because there's so much to remember, isn't there?
That is kind of like how my research log is written. It's like setting my objectives, my goals, and then not necessarily doing them, but at least that they are at the top of that list. So I can go and check when I'm either stuck or bored or don't know what I'm doing. I can go, okay, I'll do that today. Mm. I mean, largely I don't. I'll go off on another tangent instead, but they're there for when I get to that point where I don't know what tangent I want to be on.
Because new things just keep coming out all the time. Like, I only know a little bit about DNA and I always, you know, try and like shuffle little moments in here and there that I can try and learn more. But so many new developments happen the whole time. So just recently, then there's been this incredible development called MitoTree. And so it's a massive tree with, I think it's got about 500,000 profiles in it. So people, 500,000 samples of mitochondrial DNA, 250,000 of them are full sequence mitochondrial DNA. So it's giving really granular view of people's mitochondrial DNA inheritance. So they've made this amazing, they put it.
Can I just stop you?
Yeah.
What does mitochondrial mean?
Oh, so mitochondrial. So when you are, as a point of comparison, it's just easier. So if you are a boy, you inherit the Y chromosome from your dad. And by tracing that Y chromosome, you go back through your father's line. And on the whole, that mirrors by your surname because you inherit your surname from your father as well. Obviously, there were some discrepancies where the father isn't the father who you should be, so your surname doesn't always match up inevitably, but it works on the whole. But if you're going to trace your mother line, the X doesn't work like that because you inherit two X's. You inherit, if you're a female, you inherit an X from your father and an X from your mother. They get recombined and so you have your own new X's, and the X is not good for tracing your direct maternal line. But there is an aspect of your genetic inheritance which can be used to trace your direct maternal line, and that's the mitochondrial DNA. So you've got your cell, and in every cell there is mitochondria, and it's not inside the nucleus where the little all the other autosomes are. It's outside. It's in the bit outside the nucleus, and it's floating around in there. And it's like a little oval shape thing, and it's used for giving your body energy. Yeah, you actually inherit mitochondrial DNA from your father and your mother, but the amount you inherit from your father is just tiny, so it doesn't really count. So the majority of it is from your mum. And so the mum gives her mitochondria to her sons and her daughters, but only her daughters pass it on because it's the woman who's passing on the majority of the mitochondrial DNA. Yeah. Okay. So you will have inherited your mum's mitochondrial DNA. She would have inherited her mum's blah, blah, blah. I inherited my mum's mitochondrial DNA. So even though you're male, I'm female, we've both got our mum's mitochondrial DNA, but only I will pass it on to my children.
Right. Okay.
Wow. So my daughter has, one of my daughters has a baby boy and a baby girl. And so that baby boy and that baby girl, my two little grandchildren, they will have both got my mitochondrial DNA, but only the baby girl will pass it on.
Right. Okay.
It's cool, isn't it? Anyway, so there's this tree which is mapping this stuff. So which my baby granddaughter, who's just tiny, she's got my mitochondrial DNA, and this mito tree is able to trace back this mitochondrial DNA, these little oval energy things in the outside the nucleus of the cell, trace it back about, I think it's 100,000 years of this massive tree, and the tree has got 40,000 branches on it. So those are, every time a mutation happens, then a new branch happens. So these are all the different haplogroups. Yeah. So then you can trace out of Africa where your ancestors migrated over a 100,000 year journey. Yeah. And so some of this is new and some of this is not new. So there was a tree before, and I think it had about 5,000. I might be getting this wrong. I think it had about 5,000 branches. So to suddenly have this tree, which has launched very recently with 40,000 branches, that's so much more granular information. You get so much more precision about your mother line journey. So that's cool, isn't it?
It is cool. It's mind-blowing.
Because during that time, like, the Ice Age has come and gone, and even things like Pangaea, when I think they discovered it in the 50s. So, you know, we have all the different continents, and South America looks like it matches up with Africa a bit. And so at some point, all the continents were one, and then they gradually spread out. And then they... I think they've even been apart, and then they've got together again, and then they spread out. They keep moving over, if you take a really long timescale. So, and I don't even know how many ice ages. So we've definitely had the most recent large ice age, and we've probably had, I don't know this, people do know it, I just don't know how many ice ages since there have been in the last 100,000 years. But this has an impact on our ancestors travelling out from, like, the starting point of this genetic journey.
It's
when there's an ice age and you see people getting pushed back by the cold weather, or it's over thousands and thousands of years, and then they can move forward again, and it makes a difference to water levels and how, you know, where how people can move about. And
it's amazing, like, what they know from DNA. It baffles me. Like, I'm actually terrified to go back to the DNA section. I like doing the history stuff because I can find all these documents, but yeah, I'm freaked out about DNA. I don't understand it. I went to, like, a Why DNA webinar the other day. Understand a word of it. It was really good, really well thought out. I did understand it, but it was big. It's like a completely different world, isn't it?
It is. And I think, so somebody like me, you know, I was very much the sort of person at school, I loved history, loved English, struggled through anything scientific. And then now, with DNA kind of wriggling its way into the family history world, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, there's lots of people who are lovers of history who are suddenly having to get our heads around science, to make sure we don't miss out. So we actually do loads of stuff to help people with the DNA. We have a monthly DNA club. We have a DNA workbook, a DNA boot camp. And so these are kind of really regular DNA online offerings and publications that we do to help people learn how to work with their DNA test results and make sense of them in a family history context. So you've done your DNA test and you think, well, how is this going to help me answer my family history questions? And we do, you know, learning and publications to help people do that. Then we also have DNA discoveries, which is very exciting. And that's got more in-depth talks, but it's got such a range of talks that will help people. If you're new to DNA, like, one of the talks is by Blaine Bessinger, and it's like the danger of small matches, because if you have a small DNA match, you know, it's a very distant relation and you could easily get confused. So he's going to be covering, you know, how to work with them safely or not work with them. And then we've got other talks on DNA tools that people could use when you're getting, say, you've tested with Ancestry or MyHeritage or Family Tree DNA, and you want to start using more advanced DNA tools. We've got talks on the more advanced DNA tools that aren't on these key websites or on other websites. So things like Watto and Banyan. So it's just incredible, because this is such an amazing age to be part of DNA. When I started working on Family Tree, there were DNA tests. They just started, like, I think about 2 years before, a couple of years before. I think the first commercial family history DNA tests were in around 2000. But it was such a slow burn, and it wasn't until the late teens, so the last 6 or 7 years roughly, that DNA testing's really taken off. And so the companies are developing these tests, and they do cool tools to go with the tests. But equally, there's loads of bloggers and scientists who are just thinking of solutions for all of us to help us work with our DNA. And it's happening. Like we were just talking about this mito tree. That's a brand new development. You know, a bunch of clever scientific people who love DNA genealogy are building this in our lifetime. And it's quite extraordinary because it's kind of individual consumers in the commercial world basically funding cutting edge science. Bad, isn't it?
It is. It's great, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
We could just sit and wait for them to start it for us.
Yes, and they're brilliant at sorting it. Yeah. They're definitely just keeping up with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably terrible for it, but I obviously, my only reason to do the DNA test was the Viking link. And beyond that, I've pretty much buried my head in the sand with the DNA test results. I've obviously joked about my traits not all been wrong, but I don't know what to do with it. And it scares me a little bit. It's like, that's the point where I feel like I'm suddenly interacting with other humans and other people's trees. And I'm scared of taking that step a little bit. I like the paper records because I can sit and do that by myself. I'm not worrying about someone else's results, even though I'm guessing obviously the DNA stuff could probably be more accurate because it's science. It's not just guesswork from paper documents.
Yes and no. So the people on your DNA match list, until you get down to the really small matches, they are going to be accurate. You will be related to them.
Right.
Whether you can find out precisely how you're related to each of them will depend on how distantly you are related to them. And it's going to also need you to have done traditional family history research in order to work out how you match. So DNA needs paper trail, records-based family history to, so you're definitely related to them, but to work out how you're related to them, you need that paper trail knowledge. Yeah.
Is there any sort of standard depth I need to get to before I start looking at other people's, or is that again just related to how closely related they are to you? I remember I've looked at it and I've got some people with higher numbers and some people with lower numbers. Hmm. People with higher numbers are closer to my current tree. That's basically the thing. So the smaller it gets, the further away you are.
Yes. So the people who are higher up your list are more closely related to you. So they'll be a closer relation to you. They'll be closer at hand to you, literally on your family tree. So the advice, you'd want to start at the top of your list or near the top of your list and work down. And you're not going to be able to do everyone. You're going to have 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 matches. You're probably only going to work with maybe 20 of them or 50 of them.
Okay, that sounds good.
You might put more of them into groups and clusters, so you can start clustering them up. Yeah, because then you can get, so let's say if you put them into groups, then this will help you, because if one of them has a really cool tree and you see surnames that match your great-great grandparents, then you're going to go, well, they're all in a group. I know this person matches that great-great-grandparent. So all of these other people are going to somehow fit in that rough area on my tree.
Okay.
It's not so bad.
I'm still a little terrified.
I think lots of people, like, also the looking at the records is, if you love history and you're looking at a digitized copy of a unit war diary from over a century ago, it's exciting. I get it. It's totally exciting.
Yeah.
And again, you're having to use lots of skills and lots of perseverance. You're having to probably, while you're reading it, you're Googling some of the jargon you found, you're having to decode it. So it's the same sort of mentality when you work with your DNA as well.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm rightly so, but in my head, I've really sectioned it off as I look at one stage and then I will move over and look at this other stage. And I don't know whether that's just my mind saying, I want to sort this out in my head first before I then fully focus on doing the DNA matches, etc. I don't know. Maybe I need a session on that with you at some point where we look at best places to start with DNA matches.
Yes, that's a really good idea. We could do that next week.
Am I at a point where that's a good idea?
Yes, I think that is a good idea. So I've kind of bossily a little while ago said, said about maybe you doing that rotating, like one week you're going to be concentrating on just building up your tree, another you're going to let yourself indulge in a tangent, so George Horatio, or has been recently Tank Man. The third week you'd be looking at all your housekeeping stuff, like have I downloaded all my records, have I backed up my tree, or whatever it is that you feel you need to do to keep organized. Is my research log up to date? And then the fourth week could be DNA. So you are at a good place. You have built up some of your tree. So when you first got your DNA results back, you didn't really have a tree at all. You were really unfamiliar with anyone, I think, beyond your grandparents, weren't you?
Yeah.
So that means when you look at your DNA match list, most of the surnames are going to mean nothing to you. Even if you looked at other people's trees, they're going to mean nothing to you. Whereas now you've got your great-grandparents and you've even got your great-great-grandparents. So you've got all of those extra surnames which are going to mean more to you. And of course, you can share a surname with someone and not be closely related to them, but it does give you a warmer feel. You'll be able to look now at some of your DNA matches trees and see if you recognise a pair of great-great-grandparents, for instance. So you're in so much better place. All this tree building is really going to stand you in good stead.
Okay, that sounds cool.
So Nathan, I think we've now got to the time where we need to plan our homework for next week. So what are you going to get up to?
Well, I'm going to update my tree a bit. I want to, like I've said, get some more hard facts on there instead of my tangents. I might do some of my running genealogy. I've seen a picture of a gravestone, so go to my local parish church, see if the vicar, can like give me some information or I can find that gravestone. Yeah, I think that might be enough for me, to be honest.
That sounds really good. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to carry on with my pickerings. And I have been woefully getting sidetracked as ever, but I'm having such fun doing my one-place study.
Yeah, you have to give us an update on that because we haven't talked about it.
So many columns on it on my Excel sheet now. It's looking fantastic.
Great stuff.
Going to just knock yours out of the water in the Excel sheet nerdy wars.
I've got a lot to learn. You are the master.
If only, yeah. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. It's been really fun, Nathan. Thank you for sharing all of your news about your great-great-uncle. And in the meantime, if you'd like to keep up with Family Tree news, then do sign up to our free e-newsletter. It comes out once a week on a Monday, and it's an easy sign-up. You just go to www.family-tree.co.uk/newsletter-sign-up, and that's it. Okay, and we look forward to joining our e-newsletter. Bye then.
Thanks for listening.